This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
It's great to have you here on the Clark Howard Show. Our mission is to serve you with advice and information that empowers you so you make better financial decisions in your life. And in today's show, one big financial decision that many of us make is whether or not we're going to pursue a college degree. Question is, how important is it now that so many employers no longer require someone with a college degree? And I want to tell you, there are certain retailers that have signaled loud and clear that this year they're cutting the price on item after item after item they sell. And I thought you'd like to know that the price curve that's been so against us, at least for a number of retailers, is starting to bend our way. So my son is 18, and he's a pilot, private pilot, who got the private pilot's license and has his hours because he wants to fly commercial. And it used to be that it was pretty universal that you had to have a college degree in order to be a pilot. Now, airlines no longer require that. You can go to flight school and go straight to work, either for a charter or commuter, and then on to one of the mainline airlines. So we talked about that. Did he want to do that, or did he want to go traditional college that has a flight school as one of its degree programs? And our son applied only to traditional colleges that had a flight program. He wanted to get a degree and do flight, which is interesting because since it's not required to be a pilot, he could have been in the cockpit probably 2 years quicker just going straight flight school. And he made that choice, and we gave him that option. And this is the thing with more and more courses of study, that a degree is not necessary as it was before. And a lot of employers are like, well, why did we require that? So the question is, when do you do it? When do you not do it? The reality seems to be playing out not to the employee's advantage often when you're working somewhere without a degree. Because even though more and more employers don't require the degree for you to have a job with them, it seems that when it comes to promotions, it can start to be a problem. Some of this is data, some of it is more anecdotal that that's the case, but we have a little bit more than a third of American adults have a college degree today. So this is something that is a disadvantage to the nearly two-thirds who don't, if employers are in fact making promotion decisions, even when they'll hire you without the degree now for a lot of jobs. If it still affects how you can move up in a company over time, it still is a factor. But I want to tell you, there's a new tool that I've been enjoying learning how to use called the Occupational Mobility Explorer. That's a mouthful, right? It was developed by the Federal Reserve Bank in Philadelphia. And what it does is it allows you, if you're in the almost two-thirds of workers who don't have a college degree, it allows you to see, based on the skills you have, the experience you have, what jobs are out there that your skills can be used for. And the first part of it is see which occupations require similar skills to what you've already got, but that you'll earn at least 10% more in that job than you would in the job you're in. The second tool they offer is you're able to see what are the 25 most in-demand skills for any occupations in a metro. And it goes through different ways of, like, when I talk to somebody who feels dead-ended in what they're doing, and they don't know what to do next, to have the ability to have analytical tools that say, hey, did you ever think about this? Did you ever think about that? What about this other possibility? Because what you know, what skills you have, work in that. And in today's show notes, we'll have a direct link for you to being able to use the Occupational Mobility Explorer to see where you can take what you have that makes you feel dead-ended and launch in a new direction that might work for you. So college, I know a lot of people question the value of college. The stats are still clear that a college graduate earns far more and has fewer periods of unemployment over a working lifetime than someone without a college degree. For whatever that's worth, the data doesn't lie. It's clear as could be on that note.
Okay, we'll go to questions. John in Georgia wrote in. He says, my car requires $5,000 worth of repairs, but is worth about $4,000. I've been planning on this for a while, that is, saving for a replacement. So that's great news. My question is, do I trade it in, scrap it, donate it? Is there an option that gives me a tax advantage? Basically, I want to know if I can monetize on any of the options with my old car.
So if you give the car to a charity, the tax deduction is not really valuable. You're doing that because you want to. What a charity does with a car that needs such a large amount of repairs is they have the charities that take car donations. They scrap it, and they get a couple hundred dollars from whatever scrapper they use or junkyard or whatever that takes the vehicle, and you get a deduction based on, because there were abuses in this area, your deduction is based on what it was actually worth in a real contribution to the charity. The easier way to do it is that you scrap it yourself at whatever you can get, or you first see what you can receive for it as a trade-in. Based on what value you can receive, you can decide, trade it in or scrap it. And then if you want to give money to charity, give money to charity. But if you're looking at the most efficient thing to do, you start with the trade-in and then really you scrap it. And that will be the best way to get the most money is by comparison shopping one to another. You'll know where the most money is going to be. Again, scrapping is usually just going to get you a couple hundred dollars. Anything north of that as a trade-in makes that your smartest option.
And I recently had to do this same situation. The car needed repairs that were more valuable than the car. And I actually sold it to CarMax and I told them what all the issues were and they still gave me money for it. So
really?
Yeah, I was surprised.
I didn't know you sold a car recently.
I did. Yep. We had to do it. We couldn't afford the repairs compared to what it was worth. So
wow. I got to hear more about
that
later.
Yes. Pete in Massachusetts says, in the past show, you mentioned that you no longer watch TV after football season. What do you do instead? Are you reading, researching for the show, traveling? Just curious.
So you know what dovetails so perfectly with post-football? The weather is so much better. There's so much more daylight. I'm out and about so much more. I mean, I just thrive on daylight. And so from now till football starts again, the time that I would be sitting there transfixed watching the NFL on, let's see, Monday, Thursday, Sunday, you know, the hours just taken up with football, and then college, other days of the week, almost every other day of the week, suddenly I'm out having
walking
a
3 hours
time.
A day. Yeah.
I think about, like, last night we went with our son and ate outdoors and how wonderful it is to be outdoors again, sitting out on a patio eating and then walking everywhere I can. It's just great. So what happens is I become much less sedentary and even more out and about once football season is over.
Even though when you're watching football, you're not exactly sedentary. You're jumping up and down like a maniac in front of the TV.
I've made all three of my kids when they were younger burst into tears from how engaged I get in a football game.
Mark in Georgia says, this may not sound like a financial question at first, but you'll see. As a longtime listener, I remember when Clark's opening theme song was from a big pop hit from the 1980s. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to name it.
Did Clark have Fine Young Cannibals was the name of it.
She drives me crazy. Okay. By the Fine Young Cannibals. Did Clark have to pay big bucks to use that song, or was he able to sample it for free? And although it was a catchy tune, I could never understand what it had to do with the show's topic, or was it something personal where Clark found himself, let's just say, frustrated with a member of the opposite sex?
I don't even know what that song's words are.
So, she drives me crazy.
Yeah. Oh, really? I never even thought about it. Okay. So this is the true story. So I had switched radio companies. I was doing local radio at that time. And we were sitting with the program director of the new station I had moved to. And we were trying to come up with opening music. I don't know anything about music. And so they were, I was sitting there like a little kid watching parents talk, and the program director and my producer, Love Music, were trying different themes, and they said, that's it, that's it. And I said, what's it? That's the theme. And so for close to, I guess it was 30 years, we used that open from that Fine Young Cannibals thing, which I didn't even know that's who it was, but people would tell me.
And the radio station had the rights to all this music.
So the radio station, and then when I went into syndication, where you're allowed to use so many seconds free. When we switched to podcast, the rights worked differently, and we weren't able to use the music that I had used for three decades. And so I had nothing to do with it. I don't know anything about music. It was just what was picked as like a catchy kind of tune, I guess.
Yes.
And it stuck, and it became like a signature with my radio show, first local and then syndicated, that, oh, Clark's coming on. And so that's how it was picked. Coming up ahead, price cuts, price wars. It's something that is music to my ears, and I hope to yours too.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, then they'll show you a variety of coverage that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at Progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, we've been beaten around like we were in a ring with a professional boxer with what things have cost and the price increases we've suffered with the supply chain disruptions that led to our inflationary cycle and all the rest. So it's hard to accept and to process that there could possibly be any good news after the ugly inflationary news we've suffered. But I want to tell you, two very big influential players are really putting pressure in the retail environment to get prices down. First of all, Costco just reported to the financial community that in their most recent quarter, the net increase in prices across all the merchandise they sell in Costco was zero. Zero. Absolute flat line. No increase. Some items increased in prices, but they are cutting prices on everything they can because Costco is in a straitjacket. Their thing is they mark up things that are brand names, no more than 14%. Kirkland Signature, 15%. So is they're able to get the prices down for items at what it's costing them, it immediately translates into price cuts for you. So at wholesale, the cost of goods on so many products are going down, and it's weird kind of things. Like you go back into areas like buying food. An example they gave to the financial community, their product they sell that's 4 pounds of frozen fruit has dropped from $15 to $10.99. Their Pellegrino water has fallen from $16.99 to $14.99. Their batteries, $17.99 to $15.99. Item after item, because theirs is an if-then, cause and effect. They get the prices lower from the supplier, the price to you goes down immediately. And one of the things that I was reading in a financial publication is, what does this mean for its competitors? Because Costco is such a huge force now in retail, and the price pressure it puts on their competitors to cut their prices. And I don't know if you know about the shoppers that major retailers use where they shop each other. So if you go into like a wholesale club where you have to be a member, if I'm from a competitive wholesale club, I have to go sign in at the desk and alert them that I'm there. And then I can go around and price shop. And so Sam's is responding to the price cuts on various items at Costco, and they're lowering their prices. Sam's does not use a price collar, a percent markup collar like Costco does. They respond to local market pressures. They're in a market where there's no Costco, they're not going to cut the prices to what Costco is doing. They're in a market where they compete with Costco, they're going to cut the prices. This is just good news when we've had so much bad news on the retail front. IKEA, which is Swedish for particle board, I think. IKEA is rolling out a wave of price cuts on items that they sell in the United States. They've already cut the prices on hundreds of pieces of furniture, and they're doing it to many more. And they even have added a section on the IKEA website where it's the items that are new, lower price. And I don't know if you've noticed, Costco now has that on Costco.com, where they have a logo you can click on that shows you the items on the .com that now have new lower prices. So I think the big price-oriented retailers are hyper aware how weary people are from cost increases, price increases. And this is a very clear marketing initiative from two of the biggest, obviously IKEA, the biggest in furniture, and Costco, the world's third largest retailer, I think. And they are so powerful and influential. And hopefully, even if you don't shop at either of them, it will be helpful to your wallet.
All right, we'll go to questions. Derek in Texas says, I have a question about credit cards and the extra benefits they offer, specifically cell phone protection. I recently applied for and received the U.S. Bank Cash and Card, which doesn't offer cell phone protection. I was paying with my Amex Platinum, but I don't think that card is suited for me, and I'm going all cash back for the time being.
What, you don't think a $700 annual fee card was suited? Wow.
Is it worth it to sacrifice extra cash back and use the Wells Fargo autograph to have the cell phone protection? I've never broken a phone, and we aren't the type to buy new phones when they come out. Is it just the hype and marketing I'm falling for here? Thank you again for everything you do. You are truly a blessing to the world.
Well, that is very kind of you. And we do have a list on Clark.com of credit cards that offer the cell phone protection stuff. And they tend to offer coverage for theft of your phone or damage to your phone, depending on the card offer. So you said something I think is so often true, is that you've never needed the cell phone protection. So if you know yourself that you're really careful, you got a nice protective case on your phone, I would continue to earn the cash back that you can earn with the U.S. bank card instead of using a card that doesn't offer you cash back that comes with the cell phone protection. If you know you like carrying your phone around just as it is, no case on it, you tend to be klutzy like I am, then it might be worth it for you to give up the current rewards to have the protection that comes with the cell phone protection plan. Or you could look at the list, find one that's a twofer that gives you nice rewards in cash back and provides the cell phone protection.
Jay in Georgia says, by mistake, I sent a copy of my driver's license via email to my tax accountant, which was not requested. Should I worry?
You know, of the things I'd worry about in life, I wouldn't worry about that. I mean, the accountant's known to you. People who work at an accounting firm deal with people's sensitive information all the time. Gosh, they could do so much more harm than just whatever would be the benefit of having a copy of your driver's license. I would rest easy, sleep well, and don't worry about that.
Shelly in Missouri says, apparently I'm fussier about hotels than you and less price sensitive. I've noticed over the years that a newly built mid or low priced hotel is the best option in many areas. All new hotels seem to be great. After years of wear and tear, not so great. Is there an easy way to figure out what hotel is the newest in an area? The last time I made a reservation, I resorted to calling each hotel individually.
Wow.
Surely there's an easier way.
Well, first of all, don't call me Shirley. But as far as the easiest way to do this, the world's largest hotel chain, Marriott, actually has a function on their website where you can do this. And you can see in an area the hotels, the new hotels they have in that area. And Marriott owns like, what, 35 different hotel chains or whatever it is. So there's no universal list that I've been able to find because, see, I find the same thing you did. You have found that hotels that are built within the last 18 months tend to be like a shiny new automobile. They're in great shape. They're really wonderful. And they're great to stay at almost always just because they are so brand new. And it may be that some of the other big chains have a function like Marriott has on its site, but at least that's a great start, being able to see the new hotels in an area you're interested in going to on the Marriott website. Also, I want to point out again on the hotel thing, because we're moving in the time of year that a lot of people who stay infrequently in hotels stay in them on typically a summer vacation. The name on a building means nothing with a hotel anymore. And that's because the relationship between the hotel companies and the individual properties is completely different than it used to be. And they're not enforcing standards like they used to. So it can be a name on the building that you thought meant it would be a good hotel, and you get there and the place is a complete and total dump. The only chain in America, it's a small chain, the only chain in America that I believe consistently has great standards for their hotels, it's a mid-price chain called Drury, D-R-U-R-Y, because they own and operate everything they have. Other than them, you've got this franchise company relationship where the quality no longer is enforced. And that's why checking up on an individual property is so important when you're staying at a hotel. Hope you have an absolutely great rest of your day, that you spend it learning ways to save more and spend less, and don't let anyone rip you off. And tomorrow, it's time for Clark Stinks.